Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast with your hosts, Corndog and Eric. Welcome to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast. It's January 14th, 2023, and this is episode number 80. I am Corndog, your co-host, and Eric, our other co-host, is actually on vacation this week. He is camping on the beaches of Hawaii, him and his family. So, kind of different, sitting here. I'm in Las Vegas, sitting in the moto van. Our local Moran Organization Awards Banquet is going on. So I stepped out and decided to do a podcast. Got a call from a special guest. We had it lined up. And on that note, we have a past guest and a friend of ours, a fellow Groundshaker member, a good friend, and he's actually signed up for the 2023 Romaniacs race. So Trent Sandoval is going to be sitting in with us as our co-host. He is actually at home in Utah, and he has had a special guest come out and stay with him for a couple days, and they did do a little bit of riding, but we decided to call in and do a little podcast with the one and only King of the Mountain, Graham Jarvis. So here in a little bit, I will get them on the phone, and we'll sit here while I'm in the moto van, do a little podcast with Graham Jarvis and Trent Sandoval. So pretty exciting about that. I know a little backstory. Eric and I, about a year ago, had Graham all set up. We were on the phone with him. We were trying to record. But he was over in Spain, I believe, and we just could not get the signal to happen. So we postponed it, and heck, the opportunity came. Graham is, I guess you could say, close by. So we decided to get Trent on the phone and hear Graham's story. We're pretty excited about this. Go through a few little things before we get them on the phone. Just a little update real quick. It's kind of weird doing this without Eric, so bear with me. Anyway, the Umora race was today in Mesquite, Nevada, and it was at the Mesquite Motocross Park. I actually got there last night, slept in the moto van, and raced the first race of the day, and it was my first race back after being hit by that drunk driver 6 months ago, first time on the bike other than a little ride I had last week. Anyway, ended up taking first place in my class, so pretty excited about that. The parking lot was really muddy, and of course Mesquite, if any of you guys have raced the Mesquite out in away from the track, it's really sandy, and but it was pretty epic. The dirt was wet, the sand was wet, but it's still unforgiving. It'll grab your tires and throw you around without you even knowing it. Anyway, it was kind of cool. It felt great to be back on the bike. I'm sitting right outside of our Moran Awards banquet. A bunch of our fellow ground shakers are getting a bunch of awards. And then, of course, the series champions are getting their year-end championship awards. So kind of cool to be a part of that and hanging out. But, of course, heard Graham was getting on the phone with us, so I got to step out for a little bit. This coming weekend is Moran's first round of the Desert Series put on by the Gamblers, and that's going to be in Nelson Hills. So I've actually signed up to go do that again, too. So might as well jump in with both feet. And then the same weekend, this coming weekend, is the Works Race out at Prim, their round one. So I'm going to miss that on Saturday, but depending on how I feel after the Gamblers race on Saturday, I might head right over to Prim and jump on the bike and race, find a class, probably the junior vet class on Sunday, see how that works out. boy, we have a sickness, I'll tell you. What else is going on? Dakar. We got one more round left of Dakar. Man, it's going to come down to right at the end. So, Skyler is sitting in third place. I think he's like a minute and 31, 1 minute 31 seconds back. And then first and second is Toby Price and oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, first and second only 12 seconds separating those guys. So, wow, it's going to be interesting to wake up tomorrow morning and see how it went. And of course, our buddy Mason had to pull out. He had injuries a couple stages ago and pushed and pushed and just finally couldn't do it no more. So our heart goes out to Mason. Man, you are a rock star race, Mason. Amazing. Anybody to even be over there and to do what you've done, you won a stage. Amazing. So can't wait to see you here coming up here in a couple months at the Nevada 200 Trail Ride. Could shake your hand. What else do we got? Rocky Mountain Fantasy Supercross. So kind of weird not having Supercross tonight. I guess Oakland canceled because of rain and flooding. So I guess they felt that it was for the safety of the crew and the racers and the fans to postpone it. So it's going to be rescheduled, or it has been rescheduled to February 18th. So, and as far as that goes, tomorrow, Sunday, picks for the fantasy will open back up for the next round, which would be San Diego. So make sure you guys get your picks in for that. And man, what it's so hard to pick. It could be anybody. There's some big names that they just luck of the draw, I guess. So again, join our Supercross Fantasy Rocky Mountain group. It's free, and Rocky Mountain gives out some amazing prizes at the end of the year and weekly. And join our group. You go on there, join a group, the Desert Dirt Biker, and the password is dirt bike. But we'll probably be giving a prize package out at the end of the season for our top guy or girl in our group. So get your picks in, join our group. Let's have some fun. It's good bench racing. Let me see what else is going on. I just want to throw a shout out to Taco Moto, tacomoto.co. Mike over there, amazing. It's awesome to see his product and his name getting out there more and more. Every time you look at a bike or hear about a racer, they're talking about Taco Moto. So that's awesome for them. Again, reach out to us on our Facebook. It's KD Eric. Stands for Corn Dog and Eric. It's on Facebook. Email is thedesertdirtbiker@gmail.com and also the Desert Dirt Biker on Instagram. Like our stuff, follow us, spread the word, throw us a suggestion, what we can talk about, give us subjects, maybe ideas for guests or contacts for a guest. And then you can also check us out on TikTok. Started that a few months ago, and it's growing like crazy. It's crazy how TikTok. I didn't think I'd ever be on TikTok, but here I am. So check us out. So on that note, let's call Trent and get Trent and Graham Jarvis on the phone, the King of the Mountain. And man, this is huge. I feel this is really huge. Eric, I wish you were sitting here with us. But I'm sure maybe you can listen to this podcast over in Hawaii on the beach. That might be pretty cool too. So, all right, guys, let's go get these two rock stars on the phone.
All
All
right,
right.
everybody, we are on the line with our temporary co-host Trent Sandoval. How you doing, Trent?
Doing good. How you been, corn dog?
Good, good. And special guest tonight, Graham Jarvis.
Hello.
Graham Jarvis is with us. How you doing, Graham?
Hey, all good.
Very good.
Good. All right. Well, thank you for taking time out of your schedule and connecting with us. And like we said, Eric is gone in Hawaii camping on the beach with his family. So it's you, me, and Trent.
Yeah, it'll be a good time.
Cool. Well, I know it's pretty exciting, and I guess we got you on the line to hear your story and where you came from, and we got a few questions for you, and if you feel like telling anything or anything pops to mind, go ahead on.
Yeah, cool. Sounds good.
All right. Well, I guess start out. Tell us who you are and where you're from, and I guess how you got into dirt bikes.
Yeah, Graham Jarvis from England. And I started with trials at 10 years old. My family never rode bikes or anything. So I just saw some guys at the back of my house in some woodland. So just thought it was cool. I was messing around on my BMX, you know, doing stunts and riding down hills. So that kind of all related to motorcycles. And I, you know, eventually persuaded my dad to get me a bike and just started doing the same stuff. Basically, I was doing on my BMX, riding down steep hills and stuff like that, and having fun, and just loved it, and just obviously picked it up fairly easy. Won it like a beginner's trial, my first event, and then and it went from there. And literally rode every weekend, basically as a kid. My dad was, you know, really supportive. They got into the local clubs and helped organise events, so it was a good family thing, and really good times. And obviously that's where I kind of learned my skills that I'm still using today.
And you do have some skills, let me tell you.
Hey, Dave, or Corn Dog Dave, you know, same thing.
Right.
Graham, what, tell us about any family, siblings, or did your dad ride, or siblings, or just you, or? Yeah, for you, yeah. What siblings did? Did you have any siblings?
Yeah, sorry. My brother started riding before, but...
The older?
Yeah, he's a little bit older than me, five years older. So he started a few months before, but I quickly followed and got a bike. So that was good. You know, local people we could ride with as well. Luckily, we had some land, like I say, at the back of the house, but that didn't last too long, you know. Things got shut down pretty quickly, but... You know, we just traveled but down the south of England, it was mainly mud and tree roots. So we had to travel to find rocks and gnarlier terrain. So, and then when I was 17, I ended up moving north just to get better riding. And luckily, you know, I got some support. It was pretty tough trying to make it in world championship trials, just a big gap. I won all the youth classes, youth competitions, and then that, it's a big jump. So it took me like 5 years to really establish myself to get into the top five. I got up to number four in the world. And then,
and that was in trials?
Yeah, doing the trials, world championship, British championship. Okay. But when I first started, trials were more like flowing sections. It wasn't as much trick riding as it is now. So a lot of the traditional trials were still going when I started, and they were more flowing, more non-stop. So probably relates more to hard enduro now. I always say there's some similarities to hard enduro and the old style of trials, obviously, where you've got to keep moving up ravines and all the rest of it. So, and bikes were heavier then as well. The bikes got a lot lighter now in the trials. So, you know, the bike was like 3 kilos, so not so different from enduro bikes now. So, but
oh, wow.
Yeah, but you know, obviously the skills on the bike relate, the clutch, the throttle, you know, all the skills relate, but you know, you've got to transition that over to a different bike and you have to do it and ride fast as well and do it for a couple of hours.
Gotcha. Was your brother, your older brother, ever faster or better than you? Or you came from behind and passed him out?
Yeah, I was genuinely, I think, you know, when I first started, maybe similar, but soon kind of overtook him. And, yeah.
The little brother showing the big brother what's up. That's awesome.
And obviously those trials has brought you into what you do now, because you ride the regular dirt bikes like a trials bike. It's amazing.
Yeah, so it kind of, this going back the transition, it was like 2005. I started to just got an enduro bike just for fun. There was no real hard enduro sport. It wasn't established as a sport. It was just a few events that, you know, riders from normal enduro just kind of now and again. David Knight was the main man, so he was, you know, he wasn't a hard enduro rider as such, but there's like three or four races maybe maximum. And then just entered some local races, so you know, they were like 2.5 hours races, and so that kind of got the fitness up as well. You know, it's a different type of fitness to trials, and got the speed up as well. You know, I'm not never going to be the fastest around a motocross track, but I've got enough speed that I can, you know, I'm not losing too much time in the hard enduros.
So what, how old were you when you started trials, which you may have said, but how old were you when you stopped trials and started hard enduro?
Yeah, so there was a bit of a transition, 2005, I think it was. I just started enduro, and I'd already stopped doing world championship trials. I was still doing British championship trials.
So how old were you then?
Like 30.
Gotcha. So 10 to 30 world trials mostly.
Yeah.
Then you basically, once you started the hard enduro, did you pretty much just completely stop the trials or dabble on trials?
No, 2005 to 2007, I was kind of doing both, and I was still committed to British championship trials. And 2006, I did Erzberg, and then 2007, it clashed with a British championship trial. Oh. And I was kind of out of contract, so I kind of missed that. And that was the year Paddy won Erzberg factory contract. So things could have potentially happened quicker. But, yeah, you know, it was a while before I got Sherco. I was on Sherco at the time. And then that's how enduro bike came about. They'd got an enduro bike and started mixing it up. So it's a few years before I got some real good support for the races. Quite a lot I was just kind of going on my own. Erzberg, I was just relying on the local importer, and so, but it wasn't, you know, there wasn't factory teams in it too much anyway. Mm-hmm. Only KTM really focusing on Erzberg races, they didn't really support too much. So yeah, and then you know, the sport quickly progressed from there. YouTube and social media came about as well, so I was probably the first to start doing the tricks, or, you know, most where people had really seen it. So gave me a boost with the followers straight away. At the time, I didn't realize the significance of the social media. It was just like a bit of fun at the time, but now it's part of the job. So
yeah, thousands and thousands and thousands of people watch your social media, and just, I know when I watch it, I'm in awe. I'm like, how is that even possible?
Well, I could tell you, when you ride with him, it's even 100 times that. It just was unbelievable riding with him and watching him. And it just opens your eyes to the things that can be done on an enduro bike, or, you know, a dirt bike, just lines and canyons and cliffs and whatnot. And you're like, oh yeah, I guess it can be done.
So Graham, when was the last time you competed on a trials bike? Do you still do that, or?
No, not at all. So okay. Just the enduro, yeah, now and again maybe, but just not really. I've been done it for 20 years, so not a lot of motivation. You know, it's good. Guys learning to build confidence on a trials bike is good, but
Nice. So you got on the desert bike or enduro. You were doing enduros. Were you doing anything like Hare and Hounds, or did they have desert back there? Did you do some desert racing, or?
In UK, obviously, we don't have desert type stuff, so it's more multi-lap stuff, 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Hare and Hounds. So that was good for the fitness. But then most of them are like 10 or maximum 15-minute laps. So, but then I did like some world championship time card stuff, British championship time card. So I got speed up a little bit.
So your dirt bike is pretty much taking you all over the world. Have you ever raced in the US?
Yeah, I've done King of Motos, TKO,
Endurocross.
Yeah, I did Vegas. I did Endurocross for a few years, did Vegas, and some couple in the US, yeah. And then, so it's good. I've kind of seen it grow over here in the US. You know, when I first started to come over, nobody was really into the hard enduro as such, and you know, they didn't have the bike set up correctly. But now it's just good to see everyone's, you know, got the bug for it and wanting to improve and having fun and pushing the limits. And some good young riders as well, you know, the level's going up all the time, the professional level.
Right.
What was your, I know you said you rode for Sherpa, was it a shirt? What exactly was your first legit dirt bike?
Yeah, so I did it. First bike I had was a 450 four-stroke.
Sherpa?
Sherco.
Yeah, so straight to Sherco, right from trial. Or are you riding for Sherco?
Yeah, I was
trials?
Riding. I was riding for them anyway. So oh, I had a bit of an agreement, you know, with the factory and the importers in UK. So yeah, that's the only bike they had. So it was just, I just picked that up. I remember pulling it out of the shed and nearly dropping it because it was so heavy. To the system.
Yeah, you're used to the trials bikes, and then you get a 450 out. It's gonna.
So I had to man up straight away, and then or cowboy up or whatever you call it over here.
Yeah, I taught him cowboy up while he was here.
And ride the 450 for a year and a few races, but you know I finished Erzberg on a 450. I was fourth. You know the level was a lot lower then, but even so, to get that thing round was an achievement and. Yeah, rode four strokes for a few years. They had a 250 and then a 300 four stroke. And then, but you know, I liked it and won Romaniacs in 2008 on a four stroke. A lot of people might not remember that.
So, you have a fan on that very first four stroke in Erzberg?
Yeah, we fitted a fan.
Yeah.
Wow. So, your book. I actually have your book and I've been reading it. Tell us a little bit about that. How'd that come about?
Yeah, so a guy approached me. He said, you know, he's got potential. People want to hear my story and he'd like to be the ghostwriter. So, you know, told him the story and there's some good words and that's how it came about. And yeah, I think people say they enjoy the story and, you know, how I'm still riding at my age. And
how old?
47 now, yeah. 48 in April. So
how do you do it? How do you get out of bed in the morning?
Yeah, it's just, you know, keep having fun, like riding different places as well. You know, riding in Spain, we do the tours there, so it's really nice place. You know, in UK, it became more difficult in winter. 6 months of cold, damp weather wasn't so much fun in the end. But you know, riding new places. With good weather and good trails and still love doing it.
Great. Yeah, so to you listeners, if you want to check out his book, it's called Conquering the Iron Giant, correct?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
All right. You guys go check that book out. It's pretty interesting.
Where can I get that? Did you get that on Amazon or where at?
I think I got it on Amazon or eBay. I bought it a few months ago.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, Graham, Was Erzberg your very first official hard enduro race, would you say?
I don't think I did the tough one in the UK.
Oh, okay.
Probably my first race. So, yeah. And then Hell's Gate was another one I did on the 450, and then probably Erzberg. Yeah, and that was about it for the first few years. And then, yeah, and that was kind of before the YouTube and social media.
So who was your main competition in those first couple of years? You know, you mentioned a couple of guys, but who was your main three or four?
Yeah, and then I won a few races. So Chris Birch was doing the Romaniacs. He was good at that. And then, you know, Knighter kind of dropped away from it. And then Taddy was obviously racing as well. And then... Manny's dad, Andreas, Andy Lettenbickler, yeah, Manny's dad. So he's same age as me. So he was good. And then, yeah, and then kind of progressed. You know, I had a few mechanical failures and mess ups. And so I could, if I finished the race, I normally started to win okay. But the consistency came when I switched to a two-stroke. Switched to Hoosaberg was my first kind of factory ride. And then it kind of gave me a big boost from there. That kind of, yeah, it kind of really, really spiraled then into good.
So was Hoosaberg mostly four-strokes also? Or what were you riding?
No, when I switched to Hoosaberg, that was the two-stroke. It's basically the same as the KTM. So, yeah, it's just so much easier to ride, and then reliability, and I was, you know, finishing all the races and kind of won most of the races, and then new races started to come about. Lagares in Portugal was one of the first new events, and then Sea to Sky followed quickly. And then, you know, now there's obviously loads of races out there.
So out of all the bikes that you've ridden and raced, what's your favorite bike you've been on?
Yeah, I mean, they're all good in their time, aren't they? But they've obviously progressed. So the bike we've got now is the most developed. But when you go back to the old ones, you realize, you know, you can't see big changes, but every year they've improved something. And yeah, but, you know, at the time, that first Hoosaberg, first two-stroke, obviously felt like an incredible bike to maneuver about and do new tricks and push the limits.
Now, obviously, your weapon of choice now is the 300
version. Yeah, Husqvarna 300 on the TPI this year. So, yeah, every year they just keep developing and make them a little bit better. So
for the listeners that don't know, do you which Husqvarna 300, the TE, the TX?
Yeah, the TE.
It's amazing the advances the dirt bike has made over the years.
Yeah, there's so much more rideable now. So obviously going back 20 years or whatever, the bikes were probably more aggressive, and now you can ride that slow, that torque on the trials type going. And, you know, we make a few changes. So this year, I'm not a factory rider. I decided to start my own team. So we started with standard bikes, but, you know, you don't have to change a lot. We just put a TSP kit, that's a mapping and cylinder head, and then, you know, get the suspension set how we like it, and then basically good to go. Maybe a heavier flywheel, and then it's good to go. That's the good thing about our sport. You can literally take a standard bike, you know, make some small changes and go win races.
So for those that don't know what TSP is, that's two-stroke performance. They're based out of Australia. The U.S. importer is Steve Boardman over at South Bay Moto out of near San Francisco. And Graham is running that on his race bikes, the remapped ECU that you can send into them. And then they also send you a head. You can either low compression, medium compression, or high compression. And I'll tell you this, when me and Graham were riding, he basically had a bone stock 23 Husky 300 TE. Bone stock. We put tires on it because, you know, the tires on those aren't that great for hard enduro. We put some Michelin medium tires with stock tubes. No, nothing else. No head, no ECU. He brought his own bars in his own plastic, you know, because it has graphics. But really, the bars are the only thing that he changed for ergonomics, and then didn't even touch anything. Matter of fact, I think I know the answer to this. Did you check or set your sag? I didn't.
No, I didn't check.
Did you touch your clickers?
No.
He rode this bike, just didn't even check. Well, didn't adjust anything. And of course, when you're racing, Graham, you're going to do everything in your power to get that utmost advantage, you know, suspension tuned to you and exact tires that you want and protection. But out here, when we were riding today and yesterday, it's Graham Jarvis, let's face it. He's just a bone stock bike. he was doing stuff that just made me just like unbelievable. There's no way. And he does it without even stopping or dabbing. He just does it all in one motion, all the way to the top of whatever he's going or off of. It's just amazing to watch him. He's a phenomenal rider. The videos do not do him justice.
Wow. That's amazing. Because the videos are pretty dang good. So to see that in person, and you say it's way better. It's amazing.
So one of the other questions I wanted to ask him is, obviously you do hard enduro. Do you prefer the one-day format hard enduro racers or the multi-day?
Yeah, I think as I get older, one day is better. trying to get up day after a hard day, it's harder. And, you've got to be – I've got to really work to be in peak shape.
Yeah.
For the multi-day races, but I won Romaniac, so it can be done. But the last day I was literally hanging on, and I knew the other guys had more energy and fitness on that last day. But
so for the people that don't keep up on amount of wins and whatnot, he's referring to this last July in Romania. He won it for the seventh time, is that correct?
Yeah, seven times.
And that's the most anybody's ever won that race, correct?
Yeah, and it's good to think back, my first win was 2008. Wow. So it's like
15 years ago. Yeah,
a lot of years ago, and still come back and win. Awesome. And I had an injury the year before as well, so I broke my ACL at Romaniacs the year before. So to come back and win that, it was a good feeling, definitely.
That's awesome. So with that being said, what is your favorite one-day race?
Yeah, so there's not many. You normally have a qualifying and stuff.
Yeah, excluding the qualifier.
Erzberg's still the biggest one-day race. So it's just, it's so much bigger than live TV. And, there's a lot more followers. If there's one race you want to win, it's the Erzberg.
All right, favorite multi-day race? Two or more days?
Yeah, I always say Sea to Sky is a good one. It's a few days, and it's shorter days races, but and it's near the beach, so and it's a nice place.
Never did anything like Dakar or Baja or anything like that.
No, but I'd like to. I'm not going to go out and try and win it, but it's just one of them. They're races you just want to do once in your life. I think just to see what it's about and say you've done it and live the experience. It's definitely.
Absolutely. Well, come on out. it'd be fun.
So what do you typically do? Do you have a pre-race ritual with nutrition or just any superstition things? How do you get ready for a race just in general?
Yeah, I mean, you always feel better if you've done some good training and your body's not really got too many injuries. There's always something hurting, but eat well and rest up the week before, definitely, and make sure the bike's good and you know the track. Is sometimes we walk the track as well, make sure you've seen as much track as you can. Some races we can walk, some we just go in blind. So but that's the cool thing about our sport, every race is different and you can never get bored. There's always something to learn, different places to go, and it's a pretty cool sport.
Any superstitions or rituals?
No, not nothing as such. Oh. No, just focus on the track and
go ahead.
So what was your last race that you competed in, Graham?
That's a good question. Probably the last round of the championship in Spain, España. So I finished forget where I finished, maybe fourth. And third overall in the championship, which was good.
So Manny got first, Mario got second?
Yeah, Mario, and then I was third. So my first year running a Jarvis team, a private team, so, it was took a bit of work, but it was a really good year.
Nice. And what that was last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. So what's the plans for your next race to your next event?
Yeah, so we'll be doing the championship again. It's seven rounds. First race is in May in Serbia, so get prepared for that. Just focus mainly on the championship races and then doing the schools and teaching and traveling different places, maybe some smaller races as well, and select few, and then generally trying to have as much fun as we can.
So that's what it's all about.
So I'm curious, obviously, when you're a factory racer, they, you know, they pay a salary, and then you have sponsors, and I'm sure you get bonuses when you win. And then each individual race usually pays for a win. Does the championship itself, like first, second, or third for the year, they themselves, the FIM, they pay anything?
No, there's no prize money. Sometimes some races you get a little bit of prize money, but it's generally, you know, nothing too significant. And but so, you know, we've got some good sponsors, though, you know. Sponsors, you know, some like to see me racing, some just like what I do on the social media. So, but it's good. I've got making some good collaborations, and hopefully it can, the team can carry on as well when my results start going down, and we can have some young riders in the team. Maybe some US guy, maybe a Jarvis US team as well.
Nice.
Dave, well, you better put your resume in, Dave.
Yeah. good thing I'm young, right?
In racing, is there, do you find yourself thinking about anything in particular, or just focusing on what's right in front of you?
That's the good thing about riding a bike. You don't have time to think about anything else. You know, you're just looking at the track in front and going as fast as you can, picking your line, and focused on getting to the finish is the main goal normally.
Well, Graham, you talked a little bit, or you mentioned a little bit about your schools that you put on. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so just passing the knowledge on, you know, traveling around, teaching groups of all ages. You know, quite often it's older guys wanting to learn new skills and and challenge themselves. But you know, it's always a mix of different levels, so we can train all levels. You know, it's just a good feeling to give people confidence and the right tools, the right techniques to progress quickly and safely. To ride safely is the main thing.
Nice.
I'll tell you, when I was riding with him today, he's a great teacher. I mean just his resume and background, but he's a great teacher. He'll see exactly what you are or aren't doing correctly and say, hey, you know, start leaning forward here, or wait more on the rear wheel. So any of those that are ever get a chance to, you know, go to one of Graham's schools, he's all over the world basically. But when he comes to the U.S., I would highly recommend it. It's well worth the time and effort and money to be taught by the best in the world for sure.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Maybe one day.
Yeah. How about your biggest influence in racing? Now, this is kind of a tricky question for someone like you, because you're the biggest influence for
thousands.
Yeah, for most anybody in the world. And I'm sure even all these guys that are, you know, right below you in the championship at one time when they're younger, because you're older than them. I'm sure that you were the influence of them. Who was your biggest influence when you were coming up?
Yeah, obviously as a kid, you know, the top guys in the trials at the time, you know, I looked up to them and just wanted to, you know, it was the dream to be a professional rider.
Like
so,
who?
Yeah, so there was Steve Saunders was the English guy. And then Jordy, the uncle of Paul Tarras.
Yeah.
And then... yeah, and then switching to enduro, you know, David Knight was the man. So you
looked up to David Knight at one point.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Still look, you know, a lot of respect for him. Still look up to him, what he's achieved. You know, you can't take that away. World champion.
Yeah.
And that first race, you know, he was lapped. I think he lapped me twice.
Oh, wow.
So wow.
That was an eye-opener. And, you know, you see the speed I should be going. And,
if you can say lapped Graham Jarvis and he was broke down.
But you know, everybody starts somewhere. I didn't come straight in and was fast. I had to learn, train, and progress like everyone else.
That's awesome. So when you're not on a bike, what do you do for fun? Is there anything that Graham does?
Well, you know, riding bikes, it's hard to beat, isn't it, for fun. You know, it's fun as well. It is my job, but, you know, just riding for fun, doing the tours, meeting people is great. But, you know, we've got a place in Spain. We do the tours there, so that's quite close to the beach, and go chill there. And yeah.
Gotcha. What are, now you mentioned for future goals, like bucket list stuff, so maybe one day do some sort of big kind of prestigious race.
Yeah, so I got a lot of ideas and dreams, and always looking to the future. So, you know, we're doing the traveling arounds, cool, riding new places, but maybe some bigger challenges, you know, longer distance across countries, and maybe I don't want to give anyone else the idea.
Yeah, but some big plans.
I like the big adventures and riding new places, and a bit of maybe some car racing as well as the logical thing when you get older, isn't it? If the opportunity came along, obviously,
you know, with age you get a cage.
Exactly. anything new adventures. Nice. I'm not going to be sitting around drinking tea,
because that's what they drink from when you're from England. That's what you drink, right? Right on.
Well, give us a couple things that you have on your bucket list that, I mean, your bucket list is probably accomplished and overflowing, but is there something out there that Graham hasn't done that you want to do?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, traveling, even in US, you know, I know there's so much, you know, the trails and stuff, you can do longer distance stuff. You know, some of it might not be difficult, but just that challenge of crossing countries and doing the long distance challenges, and you know, might not necessarily be particularly tough riding, but just the challenge of getting from A to B and seeing new places is a cool concept.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's amazing. I want to do that.
All right, so if you have, I'm gonna give you a couple scenarios here. So you guys have English pounds, right? So if you had, I don't know, if you had $100, I'll say $200, what?
I think it's the same as the pound now, Mark.
Oh, is it? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So if you had 200 UK, not English, not American pounds, right? If you had 200 English pounds for a bike, a bone stock bike, how would you spend that 200? And then I'm going to ask you a follow-up. If you had 1,000 English pounds, what would you do? So tell us your priorities on how you're going to spend your money.
Yeah, somebody asked that before. I said, you know, buy the Jarvis edition seat cover and the Jarvis boot,
yeah,
and then you're good to go. That's more than your 500 boots, but very good quality.
Nice.
Grippy sole.
Nice. I saw them. I see that they are grippy soles.
And then, but spending your money on the bike, you know, like we said, the TSP kit, you know, does help it substantially. And then, getting your suspension set up at maybe more at a higher level as well can help. And, you know, it's worth the investment and getting that set up good and a decent set of tyres and mooses. I know not everybody uses mooses too much over here, but, you know, in races we use the mooses because you can't risk puncturing and having problems. So,
and on the moose subject, I asked him, because you hear all the different people, how many rim locks do you run on mooses, at least in the hard enduros? And he runs 2.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what Graham does.
Yeah, sometimes 3. Yeah, but wow. It's a little bit tricky to fit, but not that I fit it. But
gotcha.
Yeah, just to keep the tire out on the rim and then keeps it nice and stable.
Yeah, so it's not so much that you're trying to prevent the spin or slip, it's you're trying to prevent it from collapsing down into the valley. It doesn't stay on the bead.
Yeah, exactly. We run it so soft that it can just sink into the rim a little bit, and then it wobbles about a little bit and might roll a bit.
So on the TSP stuff, obviously the Husky motor, or, you know, we'll just say most any motorcycle these days is plenty good enough for the average rider. With the TSP stuff, what specifically about it do you like or feel that it makes you a more better rider, the ignition curve or the power or what is
it? Everything really, you know, they've obviously put a lot of work in, and it just the mixture just a lot better. It runs with more oil, it does actually make your engine and just, you know, aggressive and consistent power. So definitely, and you got the options with the cylinder head as well, so we are on a little bit more compression as well, you know, different elevation as well, you can get the different compression.
Yeah, so will you change your cylinder head depending if you're like the beach at Sea to Sky or Sea to Sky?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Or no, same cylinder head on.
Yeah, this doesn't vary too much, but I run a little bit more compression all the time.
To begin with.
Yeah.
Gotcha. There you go. There's a secret to being fast. Tire, Graham Jarvis edition, camel or
seat cover
and backpack.
Yeah, I forgot the backpack. You want the seat cover, the backpack. Yeah. Forget the bike.
There you go. Those are on his website, by the way. You can grab.
And what is that website?
GrahamJarvis.org. And then, you know, we've got the tours on there as well. We've got some different tour destinations. That's like a franchise, Jarvis Signature Tours. So that's a future project as well. It's growing nicely, giving people the opportunity to ride places that I ride. And, you know, they can give them the confidence to travel around the world, and they're going to get good bikes and good guides and good place to ride.
So you have guides. You just said that, obviously. What about you? Do you ever lead any of these groups?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll go to these places as well. And then when I'm not there, you know, the standards stay high with the, you know, it's about learning a little bit, experience the country, and just an overall adventure and experience of the location.
Now, Corndog, you don't know this, but I have something planned to go to his place over in Europe. Are your guides, is it safe to assume they're probably very high level?
Yeah, exactly. Also, yeah, generally, you know, it's low level people, low level riders. You know, the skills, you know, the basic skills. So just, you know, they're good enough guys to steer in the right direction and help out.
Well,
the locals know the land. They're good on some real good locals.
So are they helping and teaching, or just kind of leading you around?
Yeah, so a little bit of teaching advice, and then it's just a mix. You know, it's a little bit flexible as well, depending on what the riders want. Some people just want to kind of tour around and have fun. Some want to learn a little bit more. So people, different levels of fitness. So we take, you know, we split the group as well with different guides. Take them around the easy bits if you're getting tired or want an easier day.
There you go.
Not everyone wants to push the limits. But
in your tours, what are the typical days and nights and accommodations? What's included with the tour?
Yeah, in Spain, you know, everyone stays at my house, and you know, it's quite a nice personal. You get to know everybody, and it's pretty good. Bit of paella, get people in, barbecue, paella.
Oh, nice. That's a Spanish dish, right?
Yeah, it's good to try and sample the local food. And
gotcha. So how many typically days of riding or nights? How's that work?
Typically 3 days. So come return back to the house, go ride, play around, hit some trails. I've got some land as well, so we start on that. Doing some really nice terrain there. Get the skills good. Hit the trails, and then we'd be adding more longer rides as well, point to point in the future.
Gotcha.
Probably with the adventure bikes as well, the Husqvarna Nordens, we'll be doing them.
And you, for the tours, they're Husqvarna 300 TEs?
Yeah, mostly 300s, and yeah, every location's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, some have got some four strokes as well. We've got Turkey and Portugal and just, you know.
So we're, yeah, what other locations? Panama, Turkey, Portugal, Canary Islands, Spain.
Yeah.
Where else?
Yeah, Romania, and, you know, lots of people keen to add to the list. They've got cool places to ride. Become a Jarvis Signature Tour franchisee.
Nice. So, and forgive lack of geography knowledge, it's called Gran Canary? Or Canary Islands, is that the same thing? Or
yeah, Gran Canaria, there's 5 islands.
Okay, is that also known as the Canary Islands?
Yeah, the Canary Islands.
All right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Wow. Very cool. And so where are you heading to next? Are you heading back home?
So yeah, I'm off to Albuquerque.
Okay.
Yeah. But check that out. I was in Arizona last week. Some cool riding, and then California, and then off to Mexico, and then back home February, doing the full tours in Spain. So
and back out on more tours after February.
Yeah, see March I'm off
or to, more lessons. Sorry.
Yeah, February in Spain, and then March New Zealand, Australia.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then
what a life! Get to ride dirt bikes. Awesome people and awesome areas.
It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
I want to do it.
He's looking for some helper people to travel around with him, so you can apply for that, corn dog.
There you go. I'm retired and getting ready to hit the road myself next week.
All right. Cool. Like, seriously?
Yeah, I'm heading towards Georgia after next weekend and just going to stop and ride in Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, and see my brother in Georgia and do some racing over there.
Right on. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
So what kind of advice, if someone's, let's be specific to hard enduro, someone's got a good base, they've raced some local dirt bike races, enduros, and they want to kind of really focus on that hard enduro route, what's like some of the biggest things you would tell them to focus on or to do
do? You know, I see a lot of guys just get into it and it's a little bit of a shock. You know, they've got into some habits of just riding fast, riding the trails, so it's all new. But definitely once you've mastered the fundamentals, the sport does become a lot more enjoyable. You know, you've got control of the bike. That's the first thing we do. You know, the brakes and the clutch and a lot of the controls on the clutch, and then using suspension as well. Obviously doing lifting the front over obstacles. So once you've got them fundamentals, it definitely becomes more fun, and you have confidence to tackle some bigger stuff safely, you know, and keep control of the bike. That's the main thing.
So would you say that one of the most important things a person could do, but not necessary, is to ride trials bikes, like where you came from?
So trials bike definitely helps with the confidence. You know, it's a lighter bike, so you can generally save it a bit easier. And you've got to use your legs as well on the not suspension, so you've got to use your body a lot more, which is a lot of the hard enduro skills.
So corn dog went. Well, I learned a ton of stuff riding with him this last 2 days, but I think that if I had to sum up what I learned the most, other than specific individual techniques, is riding slower. Basically, when you ride slower, you have less momentum, and it requires better technique and skill to do these obstacles that, I'll speak for myself, that I tried to power through or use speed or momentum to get through. And then Graham comes along on those same obstacles and even way harder, and he just like creeps up to him, will stop, do a static balance, you know, with his nose against the obstacle or the wheel, front wheel, or halfway up it, and then just, you know, zap up. And it's like, if you really want to expose your weaknesses, start doing stuff with zero or low speed right in front of the obstacle, and that'll show you exactly how, in my case, not good I was, although I could have done this stuff if you give me, you know, 40 feet a run type of thing.
Wow.
Less is more sometimes in hard enduro, especially.
Yeah. And then after that, when he does it, I swear his RPMs never go above 1,500. It's just like the whole Silent Assassin thing. It's just rah, rah, rah. And, you know, here I am, max set, you know, got at the rev limiter trying to get up this stuff. But it's amazing to watch for sure.
Wow. I can't even imagine going slow. I mean, I do without knowing, but
yeah.
I want to hit it, you know, to make sure I make it over.
Yeah. It's all about technique, which my eyes have been opened on the ability of these bikes. And if you have skill, the things you can do on them.
I think sometimes, you know, when you learn the slow skills as well, it can help, you know, the faster stuff as well. You're more in control. You react to, you can save the bike quicker as well. You know, it all helps on the faster riding as well.
So when you're on a bike, Graham, what do you think about? Are you thinking about what you're doing next, or do you find yourself your mind wandering a little bit?
Generally, my mind's on the track. Yeah, sometimes my mind wanders, it means I'm not going fast enough. So I just go fast. Then you definitely don't think about anything else.
Yeah. Huh. So what is a horror story during a race that you just can't believe this happened, or maybe a funny story, or just a time where you just absolutely struggled? I don't know. Just give us some personal stories that are memorable to you.
Yeah. So there's, you know, lots of stories and adventures, you know, Romaniacs, some bike failures, and then you're sat out in the forest, you know, they've got to come and collect you. But you know, there are stories of people staying out all night that they haven't been able to retrieve them, so you're kind of preparing to spend the night in the forest with the so you know, you start to make a little fire and stuff. I took my filter out trying to light a fire, but everything's damp, and building a bit of a camp. You know, it was a few hours before they eventually collected me and got back in the dark. And then, so you know, it's a good adventure, you know, definitely unpredictable sport. And you know, it's just it is a cool sport. There's always some stories to tell.
And
some, you know, some crashes as well. You know, one time it was actually the last day of Romaniacs. You know, I've just got to cruise home, and then I just, you know, went to jump off this hump, and midair it had already caught some wire in the rear wheel. So it locked the rear wheel, and then, you know, obviously rear wheel locks, front comes down. And then you're cartwheeling down,
like down across the mountain? Field.
Yeah, luckily there wasn't too many rocks. So a few times, and then somebody was there to help, got the wire out, and then managed to get home and still get the win. That was back in the day when I won by a lot.
Yeah. So, Corndog, interestingly enough, when I was talking to him, so he's been on motorcycles since he's been 10. He's 47 now. I was asking him about injuries, and he has, in my opinion, had very few, which is good. I'm not trying to jinx him, injuries. So he tore your ACL at Romaniacs the year before last. I think you said you broke a thumb once and maybe hurt your shoulder, and that's like it.
I've had enough. Dislocated shoulder, both ACLs, broken thumb, lots of,
And that's got to be, serious. Obviously, luck has a lot to do with it too, but when you have a high skill set, you make good decisions and ride well, and the chances are...
Exactly. You know, you're always, even, you know, the top guys riding, you know, safe as they can, you know, keys to hardware, you feel confident, but anything you can't see, obviously long grass and water, and, you know, you're trying to take the luck element out of riding, and that, you know, generally, you know, shit's going to happen sometimes, you know, you just try and, you know, weigh up the percentages and take risks when you calculated risks as much as you can.
Dave, just curious, how are we doing on time before we have to reset?
We got a couple minutes, and we can either take a break or call it, whatever you guys, if you still feel like talking, we'll take a break and come back on. Or
break and come back. I got some, he's not getting off that easy. I got more questions for him.
Okay.
So, next question I have is, when you're racing this hard, or any race, but it'd have to be a hard enduro, I assume there has been sections that you may have had to get help from another competitor, and they helped you, kind of that help me help you thing.
Yeah, it's happened a couple of times. Once with Gomez in Ecuador, you know, we just got to a place, we couldn't get up. We just helped each other.
So how does that go down? Has there been something kind of previously talked about, or you just are next to each other and you just look at each other and go, all right, I help you, you help me?
Yeah, obviously the fair thing to do, you once you've helped each other, you've got to kind of share the win, unless you agree to race point. So, and then it happened in Erzberg, his most famous one, where, you know, we walk the track in Erzberg. We generally know 90% of the track, but that 10% where they just add it in, like the night before. I don't know whether they come out in the night or, and put this in, because nobody knows about it.
Maybe so the fans change the course.
Nobody knows about it, and nobody's ridden this new bit of track. They don't even know if a bike can get up it. They're not even riding the bike down it or put a line. Just loose. So it kind of, we got to that place, and you know, when you're there, I don't know, 20 minutes, it's like a little bit like, and you're in the same place. It's like, we're going to have to team up here. And
so who was that that you teamed up?
I think there was five of us.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So Graham, have you ever gotten help from someone first and then took off to help them, Graham?
No.
No, you always help that?
Once they've helped you, it's a gentleman thing to
there
do.
There you go. That's awesome.
Nice.
What else you got, Corndog?
I guess we could take a break if you got some more to talk to him. A couple more questions, and we'll come right back.
Take a break, reset, and we'll finish up.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, we'll see you.
See you in a minute.
Minutes.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast. We're here for another episode, and just got to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, the people that keep this thing rolling and keep us going. That's Takamoto. Thanks, Mike, over at Takamoto, stepping up huge, supporting the podcast. We love what you guys are doing as well, kicking out awesome products and parts for KTMs and trail bikes, Hondas, whatnot. So if you guys are in the market for parts, fuel pumps, hard parts, they got all kinds of stuff. Go check them out. They got great pricing. And you never know. Mike likes to hook people up too. So
Takamoto. Yeah, it's pretty cool too to see, tune into the Dakar and see Takamoto on some of the bikes over there and riders.
Yeah, he's supporting some of the biggest teams over there, Mason Klein, Skyler Howes. He's also supporting some of the bigger teams in Baja. So
get his name out.
Yep, he's doing well. He's definitely put in the time to develop some awesome parts and bike setups. They do repairs. They do all kinds of stuff, guys. So go check him out. He's got tons and tons of YouTube videos with great content. Anyway, we can't thank you enough for your support on the show. We love it. We love you guys. Thank you. Go check out Takamoto.co.
Takamoto.co. Takamoto. All right. We were back with Trent Sandoval and special guest Graham Jarvis.
Okay. Yeah, we're back.
All right. Well, thanks for coming back with us after that little break. And what do we got for Graham now, Trent?
I was going to ask him about his training regimen. Obviously, Graham, you're out on the road a lot, racing and doing schools and whatnot. But let's say before you were doing the schools, in between racing, what, and especially, you know, I know you're older now, but when you're, you know, first coming up and doing really well, like you still are, what is or was your training regimen, if you will?
Yeah, it's kind of changed over the years a little bit, but, you know, it's not no excuse when you're traveling not to do anything. So, you know, you can always do press ups and exercises in your hotel room or wherever you're staying. But I do quite a lot of weight. So naturally, I'm not so muscular. So and getting older as well, you lose muscle. So keeping that muscle strength is really important. So doing some heavy weights as well. But hard endurance, all round fitness. And then obviously avoiding injuries, just keeping everything strong and feeling good is important as well, sir. But everybody's different, you know, different body types, so you can't say one training program's good for everybody.
Gotcha. So I'm racing Road Maniacs this coming July, and I've kind of asked you this, and you made some interesting insights that Romania has just very long steep uphills and very long steep downhills, right? What muscle groups do you tend to feel on those steep uphills and downhills?
Yeah, so obviously our arms and shoulders, it's a lot, but at the same time, you know, you need the leg strength, but, you know, all round strength. I think you can burn out quickly if you have a big problem. You're tumbling down a hill trying to lift the bike back. You can, you know, you can burn out quick in one mistake is one issue. But, and obviously riding for long hours, the best training is always riding the bike. You know, gyms works good, weights are good, any kind of exercise is good, but riding the bike, it's got to be done. Getting the forearms, you know, that's a lot of it's the works in the forearms, and that's the best way to ride in the bike.
So time on the bike.
Yeah, and obviously the Jarvis skills that you've learned today to ride efficiently and safely.
Yeah. that's a good point he makes is, let's face it, people, I'll speak for myself, people that aren't professionals that have kind of picked up I've always kind of gravitated towards the technical type riding, but kind of focusing on the hard enduro later in life as an older person. What you learn very quickly is being efficient on the bike, or what I learned is that I'm not very efficient on the bike, and I have a lot of things to practice and train on now. And he just doesn't use any energy when he rides because he's so efficient. So it just boils down to being efficient on the bike and not trying to manhandle like we talked earlier about, and trying to just muscle up stuff. Because A, it wastes energy, which is going to hurt you later during the race, and it wastes time. You know, if you just have better skills, you're going to ride much more efficiently and have a better time. But that's something I've noticed immensely, is just not fighting against the bike, working with the bike. Is that what you said? That's a fair assumption?
Yeah, letting the bike do as much work as possible, riding efficiently. Yeah, you get older, it becomes more important.
And I learned a lot, but also riding with him is, I mean, he will if he has to, but pretty much he says, don't be lifting your bike. He says, you can get out of most things just by getting better angles, better techniques, and not lifting your rear end around and lifting your bike. You're just going to burn out.
I try and explain, you know, there's techniques to everything, and getting stuck or getting unstuck, you know, there's a lot of techniques. Everybody's going to get stuck at some point. All the top guys, you know, we get into tricky situations, and it's about getting out of them, thinking it through quite a lot of the time, you know, just positioning the wheels efficiently, pushing in the right way to get out of trouble.
Mm.
So what are currently your sponsors that you, yeah, I'm so, sure there's more than you can remember if you don't have a list, but what are all your
a lot of new sponsors with me doing my own team. So yeah, KYT helmets, Gayern boots, S3 doing the race gear, TSP, like I say, for the mapping. And big thanks to them guys. We've got some new sponsors coming on board as well for more than last year, so it's really good.
So your boots, what company is that? How do you pronounce it?
I call it Gayern.
Garnet.
Yeah, I know you guys call it Garnet. You know, you have changed a lot of the English words, but honestly, it's obviously Italian. I don't know how they pronounce it, to be honest. But I say Garnet to them, and they don't correct me. So,
do you say a Cherby? Is that Cherby's?
Well, call it a Cerbys.
A Cerbys.
No, I still don't know whether that's right, but.
And then what about the exhaust? Acropovic, Acropovic?
FMF.
FMF! He doesn't know what Acropovic or Acropovic or whatever that is even is. FMF. Dude, that makes that easy.
Get an FMF, it's easier to say.
Well, then because it's an American company, it's easy to say. Any sponsors that you guys are on board with this year, or is that it?
Yeah, a lot more sports. I can't think of. I'd have to look at the race.
Look at your race shirt to see what's on there.
Yeah, we've got some good guys helping us.
Nice. Who do we got here? His race shirt's right here.
Michelin, Basswell, they did the van, Twin Air, RK Chain, XL Rims, Giant Loop.
Nice.
Motrix, WP.
S3 and Jarvis Racing. You sponsor yourself?
Yeah, definitely.
Nice.
The Jarvis brand is going to be
awesome.
That's great.
A corn dog. That's all I can think of.
Okay.
And thanks a bunch, Graham, for teaching me, and thanks for just, you know, stopping by to do this podcast with Corn Dog. And like you said, Eric's on his way to Hawaii, so I got asked to be, and thank you, by the way, for asking me to help out and be the co-host tonight.
Heck yeah, appreciate that, Trent, and thanks a lot, Graham. I know we tried it a while back, and I think you were in Spain and we couldn't get the signal to work, so appreciate you hanging out and making it happen again.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We'll have a catch-up soon, I hope.
Does the rain truly fall on the plain in Spain since you're from there?
Well, I'm in the south, and it definitely doesn't rain there.
No. All right, guys.
Thanks for the interview with Graham, and I'm glad I was able to be part of this.
Heck yeah. Can't wait to get it on the air. I'll see once it's published, and share it with everybody you can, and let's get the word out some more.
Hey, cool. All right. Get back into that Moran banquet and have fun.
All right. Will do. Thank you, guys.
Cheers, guys.
All right. Take care.
All right. Safe travels.
Good night.
Bye.
Oh, my. Well, we are back. Trent, I can't thank you enough for making the opportunity to have Graham Jarvis on the podcast. And thank you so much for sitting in as our guest co-host. And Graham, thank you again for coming on, taking time out of your schedule, sitting down with us. Man, what a story. I know we could probably talk for hours and hours, but wow. Thank you again, both you guys, for coming on. I hope you guys have enjoyed this show. I'm almost speechless. I'm like a giddy little schoolgirl over here. But Eric, we missed you on this one. Can't wait to do it again. But it was kind of cool doing it in the Moto Van. And on that note, I'll probably be doing the next few shows from the Moto Van. I'm going to be hitting the road, heading back east, stopping at a bunch of places in between here in Vegas and Georgia. My brother lives in Georgia. He races the Sork Series down there, so I might go and see if I can race right in there. Going to stop along the way and see some friends, ride some bikes, hook up with some people that I know that live across the country. So I'll be traveling through Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, all the way into Georgia. So looking forward to that. So I'll be doing some shows either from the side of the road in the Moto Van or wherever I'm at. Time will tell. Anyways, I guess that's it for us tonight. I got to get back into the Moran banquet. Got a lot of ground shakers in there receiving awards. Hated to miss some of that, but I couldn't pass up the opportunity to get Graham on the phone for you guys to hear his story. So again, go check out his book. It is an awesome book. It's called Conquering the Iron Giant, and it's a book about Graham Jarvis. So I bought my copy, I believe, on Amazon. It's amazing read so far. Go check that out. Again, thank you, Taco Moto. And reach out to us on our Facebook, Katie Eric, or email thedesertdirtbiker@gmail.com, Instagram, thedesertdirtbiker, or on TikTok. Hope to hear from you guys, and until next time, we'll see you at the races.
You have just listened to another episode of the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast. Thank you for listening. Make sure you tune in next time. See you at the races.